Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program, Very Mod. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, October 11, 2021. South Sudanese working with the Dar Petroleum Operating Company have gone on strike.
So they have been actually discussing with their management so that they can be paid allowances, but they still nothing happened. So they start actually going for the strike from March and then April until now.
And thousands of children are out of schools in Unity State due to floods.
Before I was in the school, but now the school was affected by floods. That's why we did not go to school. Even the teachers were affected by the floods.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. National staff at the Dar Petroleum Operating Company, a consortium of oil exploration and production in South Sudan, have gone on strike, protesting lack of implementation of a unified human resource policy at the oil fields. The Secretary General of the Oil Workers Trade Union, Ater Yot Riak, says the oil companies at the DIPOC consortium have ignored directives from the government of South Sudan's Ministry of Petroleum to resolve an ongoing dispute over allowances and salary disparity of national staff at various departments in the oil fields. Riak says if the strike continues for 3 days, oil production would suffer from the effects of this industrial action.
The issue started long time back from 2019. When actually the staff, especially national workers, they start requesting for the allowances to be paid for them based on the old policy, which is 2008, which was for Sudan. So they have been actually discussing with their management so that they can be paid allowances, but they still nothing happened. So they start actually going for the strike from March and then April until now. But of course, still nothing actually still happening.
Why are the partners or oil companies not following the human resource rules of South Sudan?
Those oil companies actually have been actually dominating by the partners, mainly from China and Malaysians. These are the main players in the oil industry in South Sudan. So they dictate the decisions in those companies, or they call themselves partners. So whatever coming from the government, sometimes they try to resist by saying they're still negotiating, or they need clarification from the government why this policy need to be implemented, something like that. But of course, the policy is not negotiable. This is what actually they don't understand. But of course, if they want to negotiate, they may negotiate on implementation matrix. Because the policy is already approved, so what they should maybe negotiate with the government is actually how to implement the policy. So until now, this is whereby people actually are standing still. They start working, they want the policy to be implemented according to the resolution of the Council of Ministers that time, in 2018, June. And then also the ministerial orders from the Minister of Petroleum, when by the old policy is nullified and then cancelled, and then they have to go with the new policy. But then still, what they are saying, every time we are saying, they are saying they need to negotiate and they need clarification from the Minister of Petroleum. Then after that, they will implement the policy. And then the last time, what they did last time, they wrote a joint letter whereby they said also they still need more clarification from the government or from the Minister of Petroleum so that they can go for the implementation. Of course, the staff, the natural workers, I mean the natural staff workers, they refused, and then they rejected this proposal. They decided to go for another strike so that they pressed those companies to implement the policy.
How many national staff from South Sudan have gone on this particular strike?
Well, I have no idea exactly how many people, but what I know now, DIPOC is the biggest product company. So this is the one who started today. But the rest of companies like DIPOC and ASPRO, I don't know how about them. This is what I learned.
What are some of the reasons or issues behind this strike?
Almost all allowances, they are not getting all allowances, including accommodation, housing, scarce allowance, shift allowances expected from the field staff. So all these allowances are not paid. And then also the loans, gold loan also is not also given to them. And then also, then of course the other benefits like insurance fund, also they don't know where is it. So all these issues, I think the issues only is allowances, it's only allowances. And then also the salary structure, because they've been using the old salary structure from Sudan, as I mentioned to you. So from that time, they are still receiving the salary based on all this policy. Because now the new policy is giving them, the new salary structure need to be also introduced. And then of course, all these allowances also that also need to be introduced so that they can get those benefit from as mentioned in the new policy. This could actually affect the daily production, because most of the staff, of course, in the field are South Sudanese. So the effect actually will start appearing in the fields, whereby the production is taking place. If to continue like this, the strike for 3 days, another 3 days, 4 days, then the impact will be very bad for the production, especially in the field. So that's why we need to see the solution very quickly, so that you can find a way how to solve this issue.
Can you tell us some level of communication between you and the partners, and what are they telling you?
They are saying the same thing as they mentioned in the letter. They need clarification from the Minister of Petroleum, and they need more clarification on the policies and the other document also. We were approved by the Council of Ministers. They need more clarification. So that means they need to negotiate the policy, and then they have to reach to the level that, let's say, maybe we want to win games. Maybe this is what they want. So, that I mean, in the current situation in the of the policy, they have seen like they are not winning anything. So they have to see themselves inside the policy whereby they can see the benefits. But if they are not seeing the benefit, this is whereby they are saying we need more clarification from the Minister of Petroleum, and then also they need to negotiate where they can together meet with the government.
The national staff working at various oil fields have complained several times that when it comes to field allowances, especially like hazard allowances, the expatriates are favored and paid more allowances than the local staff. I mean, I just can't understand this, because when you're all out there in the field where the conditions are rough, you deserve to be paid the same amount. Because at the end of the day, the mosquito does not know who is a national and who is an expatriate.
Yeah, actually, that's what I mentioned before, because all these allowances, they are not paid to South Sudanese for some reason, they said. That's why we said we need to this policy to be implemented as they are requesting. Because the new policy actually given the right to all this kind of type of like hazard allowances, risk allowances, or transportation allowances, whatever, those are coming from far away also, they are giving also the same allowances. So that's the issue, that's the main issue, because for some reason, as I mentioned to you, the national are not being paid the same like they expected. While they are the same, they are working in the same conditions like in the field now. All of them are exposed into toxic gases, as you know. Anybody actually who is working with oil company, whatever you are expected or not expected, all of you are exposed to those dangers who are very known to the oil industry in the world.
When will this particular strike end?
Well, the oil end, yeah, of course, nothing actually should be permanent. That's what I know, nothing is permanent. And also, I'm trusting also the government of South Sudan, especially Minister of Petroleum, they're working also very hard together with other stakeholders of the government to solve this issue. Because I know the whole government stakeholders, they are also very concerned about the condition of the national staff in the workers, in the oil industry. And I believe now, as I'm talking to you, there are so many efforts being exerted so that to solve this problem. And also, I'm still also saying also, I'm also trusting our partners, especially Chinese and Malaysian and India, and also maybe they're also working also, because it's not when they are keeping quiet, it doesn't mean the exit situation, but of course they're looking for a way to come to ground whereby they can meet all together with the national staff, and then also with the government, and then our partners. So these three parties, and I believe they need to sit down together and then they solve this issue. So what I want to say, because they have to do what's so called win-to-win game. So all of us have to benefit together ourselves so that we get out from this situation.
That's Ater Yot Riak, Secretary General of the Oil Workers Trade Union. He spoke with me from Juba earlier today. More than 65,000 pupils and students are out of schools in Unity State due to floods caused by heavy rains. Officials in Unity State say some schools are submerged while others on higher ground are being used to shelter families displaced by the floods. A director general in the Unity State Ministry of Education is calling on aid agencies to support education sector. For VOA News, Sheila Pony reports from Juba.
That's the sound of villagers winding through flood waters near an internally displaced persons IDP camp in Unity State's capital, Bentiu. Thousands of students across the state have not been able to attend classes due to flooding. 15-year-old James Mading, a primary 3 student at Majakul Primary School, says he cannot believe he's not being able to go to school for the past 2 months due to the floods.
Before I was in the school, but now the school was affected by floods. That's why we did not go to school. Even the teachers were affected by the floods. So they are not coming to school. I am not happy because of these floods. That have affected us. Now it has almost like 2 months without going to school. So this is a challenge.
A 21-year-old Nyal Maro, a senior 2 student in Rupkona Secondary School, says most students have stopped attending classes after their villages were cut off by the flooding.
Last time we are about 15 in the class. Now maybe 7 may come, 5, due to that of flood. Yeah. And due to the no another school, maybe some teacher may go and help their family outside. That is why we may not have good education or teaching.
Lino Nial Gadet, a teacher in Rumbek Secondary School, says the number of students in his class has also dropped significantly and the floods have brought enormous sanitation challenges.
The number of learners here, it has been reduced since the flood started. Because there are some people who have been displaced from their homes to other areas. So it has affected them in order to come to school. That is an issue that reduced the number of the learners in the school here. So as per CNO1, so there are 50 plus. They are now 40.
Michael Majak Malwal, the Director General of Unity State's Ministry of Education, says schools and homes have been submerged in 7 counties across the state, leaving more than 65,000 students and more than 1,000 teachers stranded.
The total number of schools affected in Unity State are 109. Then I have the total number of boys affected are 40,676 in all 7 counties. Then I have a number of total students, girls affected by the flood are 24,746 girls affected by the flood. Then the total number of male teachers affected by the flood are 1,179. I have also a number of female teachers, 272 female teachers affected.
Majak says students told him they lost their possessions, including textbooks, in the floods.
They lost also their exercise book because all material, their material, are in water. They lost all teaching materials that they had in those areas. We in the Ministry of Education and General Instruction in Unity State are very concerned about these children because our children need to be educated in a conducive, safe environment. We need each and every child to be in school. Though we have the flood,
Majak is calling on aid agencies, including the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, and the International Organization for Migration, or IOM, to intervene and ensure that children continue to study despite the flooding. Peter Van, IOM Chief of Mission in the country, tells South Sudan in Focus that humanitarian partners are calling for more funding to support flood victims.
We are advocating in Juba, together with the partners, to have more funding coming available for Unity State and for the situation both in the IDP camp and for the flood victims.
Van says the long-term solution to flooding in Unity State lies not in humanitarian support, but in water management. For VOA News, I am Sheila Poni in Juba.
As South Sudan marks the International Day of the Girl Child today, some girls are calling on the government in South Sudan to offer scholarships or reduce school fees to encourage school enrollment for girls. Some South Sudanese girls who spoke to this program say they have extra expenses every month. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino has more from Juba.
19-year-old Rebecca Nyandeng, a student at Darling Wisdom Secondary School in Juba, says the cost of living in South Sudan is very high, including school fees, which directly impacts the education of many girls. Nyandeng, who lost her father years ago, says she depends on relatives to pay for her education. She says sometimes her relatives take too long to pay her school fees because they have other financial priorities. In addition, Nyandeng says girls have extra needs which often affect their school attendance.
As girls, it's the way that you want our school fees to be deducted from the boys. At least we don't pay like 20%, like to help us and get our own personal needs. And for the like the sanitary towels, things like deodorants, we expect like the government to at least support, at least once a term, they should help the girl child like bring pads and then also like some small money just for the girls. So, like, once you get motivated, you'll want to do something for this country.
19-year-old Estefania Justin, a student at Juba Day Secondary School, says fees at her government-run school are also a little high. Justin, who wants to become a medical doctor, says she lost both her parents years back and must pay her own school fees. Justin says she has a nursing internship at Juba Teaching Hospital, where once in a while she is given some incentives to cover her transportation costs, some of which she saves for school. Justin also believes school fees should be reduced for girls.
I need our teacher to reduce the school fees so that I cannot go out from the school. I will continue with my school so that it will not affect me in the future. And even the government to give us a scholarship so that it will help us in future.
Arok Matur, another student at Darling Wisdom Secondary School, says she is not happy with her Dinka culture because girls are married off at the age of 18, a practice that she says discourages many girls in her community from finishing their studies.
I had a dream of being a psychiatrist, but when Dad heard about it, he told me that it will take me a lot of years in school. So I was supposed to offer agriculture, but he told me, no, instead, let me offer additional math where I'll do engineering and have less years in school. Well, that really affected my dream, as in now I'm doing additional math, but it's not out of my will. And then secondly to that, the people around, sometimes they be asking us that, who will marry you? You're already old and all that stuff. So side things discourage us as girls.
19-year-old Riman Ngor, another student at Juba Day Secondary School, says not getting support from parents is a big challenge for girls trying to achieve their dreams. Ngor says her parents recently confiscated her phone after accusing her of using it to talk to boys. She says she feels like she's missing out on a lot of things because in today's digital world, students share coursework or other information through social media accounts like WhatsApp. Ngor urges parents to build confidence in their daughters.
They should support us, encourage us at school. Like, the most important thing is trust. We really need trust, especially from our parents at home. They should also give us, like, they make us feel important.
Esther Kumu, the Director General for Gender at the Ministry of Education, says education officials have been encouraging girls to finish their studies.
I remember the order that was given for the girls who were pregnant to go back to school and sit their examination. That's already a commitment. And we have trained over 20 teachers to continue with the radio education on air, and so that the girls can catch up with what they have missed. they have also sponsored 150 girls, 75 in a boarding school known as Alel Chok in Wau, and 75 in Maridi. So these are some of the efforts the ministry is making in order to allow girls to continue with their education.
Akomu says, considering that the world is moving digitally, the government has made a commitment to introduce digital learning in schools, although they are still affected by the country's economic situation. She says the digital learning will also enable girls to continue studying. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Authorities in northern Bahr al-Ghazal state have banned the sale and consumption of shisha and a brand of an alcoholic drink called Star Gin. The decision was approved by the State Council of Ministers. The deputy mayor of Awil town says authorities believe consumption of both shisha and the Star Gin is harmful. For VOA News, Ho Akotho has more from Awil.
Shisha, also known as goza, hoka, najila hagli, and herbal babo, is a water pipe with a smoke chamber, a bowl, a pipe, and a hose. Especially made tobacco is heated and the smoke passes through water and is then drawn through a rubber hose to a mouthpiece. Shisha smokers inhale a combination of tobacco prepared in molasses and a mixture of fruit flavors. Sometimes the tobacco is mixed with opium. Northern Bahr al-Ghazal state authorities say they believe shisha is harmful for the health of children, youth, and women, and have authorized Awil municipal authorities to impose the ban on its sale and consumption. Arkangelo Arumaduok is the deputy mayor of Awil town.
It was a resolution from Council of Ministers, resolution number 18, which bans shisha and Star Gins in northern Bahr al-Ghazal. The Council of Ministers sit with the memo presented by the Honorable Minister of Local Government Law Enforcement Agencies. Because actually, if you move around to the market at the night time, even at the daytime, you find these small children and even the women. You find them, they are smoking along with the main, alongside the roads in the main market or in other market, which fall under our municipal council.
Aru says municipal workers are imposing the ban on shisha and Star Gin. He says workers will continue to confiscate and destroy any shisha smoking materials or Star Gin whiskey they ban.
We have confiscated some material, the shisha and the Star Gins. After we finish our exercise, because now we are still cracking down all this and the Star Gin. When we finish, then we will sit, form the committee, then and this thing will be banned in front of the publics. They are still in the store now, but we will do that. We will not give them to the owners, but we will ban them.
A 20-year-old man selling shisha who wants to be identified only as a chwil for fear of reprisals from authorities says his business is the only way he raises money to take care of his family needs. Achil says he plans to continue selling shisha despite the ban.
Despite the calculating order of its ban of the shisha, I put my clients in the secret place where the authorities cannot detect and they can come and find it and smoke. Now the government is interfering and there is no other job. I used to do farming but no better production, and the COVID disrupted my progress in the school, so I started selling shisha.
James Lual, who sells Star Gin in the market in Awil, says he does not see any reason to ban shisha or Star Gin. He says people who commit violent crimes, including those involved in intercommunal fighting, are not necessarily shisha smokers or whiskey drinkers. He says the government should focus on more important issues affecting the citizens.
The government should understand why people are always fighting and investigating the issue of affecting the common people, rather than banning this to consumers' good.
Dr. Wolakan Majok, the director of Awil Civil Hospital, says excessive shisha smoking and drinking can cause health problems. He says consuming shisha or Star Gin whiskey can affect a person's lungs and heart.
To smoke shisha or cigarette is harmful for your health. It can cause lung problem. So we have to reduce, if you are able to stop it, you have to reduce the number of cigarettes that we are using for a day. Because at the end, we will end with the lung problem, mostly lung problem, and then you will lose yourself.
Instead, officials say they will form a committee to determine what fines people caught selling or consuming chicha or whiskey must pay. For BOA News, I'm O Akodo in Awiltown.
From Awil, we move to Sudan, where officials from Khartoum State say they are introducing new restrictions on real estate sector, including furnished apartments. Foreigners living in Khartoum who wish to rent furnished apartment must now provide legal documents showing their resident status in Sudan. Khartoum State authorities say the new measures will minimize security threats and terrorist activities across the state. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Under the new rules, foreign nationals from Middle East countries will be required to present legal documents for residency in Sudan, including valid passports and verifying they have no previous record of engaging in terrorism in order to rent an apartment in Khartoum State. Authorities at the State Physical Infrastructure and Planning Ministry say the new measures are meant to track terrorism activities and maintain security for the local population. Some investors in the Sudanese real estate industry have welcomed the new measures, saying it will help track the records of foreign nationals who want to reside in Khartoum and give landlords a sense of security. Speaking during a one-day forum organized by the Sudanese Real Estate Associations in Khartoum over the weekend, association member Tijani Ahmed Said said the recent discovery of an alleged terrorist in Khartoum has affected their industry. He says landlords are no longer interested in renting their apartment to foreign nationals.
Sometimes they come and rent a house without any legal document, and we want to take measures against this. This way they will be under monitoring by the security organs, and as such it will minimize and limit the rate of criminal activity.
Tijani says the raid in the alleged terrorist group in Jabra last month was a lesson for all landlords that they must be extra vigilant when renting to any foreign nationals. Muhammad Salah Muhammad, who owns an apartment in Khartoum, says the new mechanism of verifying legal documents for every tenant will help maintain security and social behavior. Salah says, aside from alleged terrorist activities, security operatives have also discovered other illegal activities being practiced by foreigners.
This sector needs a lot of work and coordination between the private sector and security organs to enlighten the people about the danger of terrorists and security threats that are caused by the act. Apart from the dangers of terrorism, there are also other security threats, which includes imposters, beggary, and forgery.
Jabra resident Ahmed Ataib Issa is calling on locals to report any suspicious activities to security officials.
People need to immediately report any suspicious activity to the security organs, as it was the case in the recent incident. We have seen the importance of sharing information with the security organs.
Last week, Sudanese authorities say they killed four suspected terrorists and arrested 15 foreign nationals believed to have been members of Islamic terrorist group at Jabra neighborhood south of Khartoum. Most of those arrested are Egyptian nationals. The 15 suspects are being detained in Khartoum and continue to be interrogated, according to security officials. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday. We now leave you with Power Stars and the song Kwenya Kwenya. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Madrid, Mambo, Zeta, Diego.